This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The Italian Foreign Minister Angelino Alfano has announced a new €200 million fund for Africa to reinforce the external borders and stop the departure of illegal immigrants making that crossing across the Mediterranean to Europe. And this money has been set aside primarily for cooperation with Libya, Tunisia, and Niger.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, the African Union is moving forward on what it calls a withdrawal strategy from the International Criminal Court.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the African Union is moving forward on what it calls a withdrawal strategy from the International Criminal Court, a move that is not legally binding but could alter peace, security, and justice on the continent. Meanwhile, a day after the end of an annual summit of heads of state, the continental body says it's moving forward with great optimism on plans to break conflicts in African hotspots. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
In the end, buried beneath the pomp and ceremony of a usual African Union summit, one of the biggest decisions made by African heads of state was made without fanfare, behind closed doors. Dozens of heads of state, some of whom have been accused of war crimes or are wanted by the International Criminal Court, quietly moved in the last day of the summit to implement a mass withdrawal strategy from the controversial court, which African leaders have long accused of unfairly targeting them, pointing to the fact that of the 39 individuals indicted so far by the court, all 39 are African. VOA News obtained verification of the decision from two sources who are well-connected within the AU and who identically described the motion. In short, they said this is not legally binding, but rather a political statement that if any of the court's 34 African members chooses to withdraw, the union will support the move. In the last year, three African nations have expressed intent to begin the lengthy and complicated withdrawal process: Burundi, Gambia, and South Africa. Researcher Ndubisi Christian Ani of the Addis Ababa-based Institute for Security Studies explained the decision and said it could inspire other states to start looking to leave the ICC.
But now the withdrawal strategy is a political tool for the AU to voice the concern, the collective concern of the African states regarding the ICC. With the withdrawal strategy being adopted, it now motivates African states to withdraw based on their own sovereign decision, without any backlash from the African Union.
That may not sound like much, and he stressed the strategy is as vague as possible. But Ani says it's significant, especially for those who consider themselves victims of war crimes and crimes against humanity.
The decision to withdraw is very significant against the whole effort to combat human rights violations in Africa, especially in view of the fact that the African court is not yet functional and the judicial system within the respective states are not reliable.
As the sprawling AU headquarters compound returned to business as usual Wednesday morning, the re-elected commissioner of the Peace and Security Commission, Smile Chergi, was back at work brokering peace in the Central African Republic, where rebels have sown chaos since 2012. He told VOA that the AU was working hard on responding to conflict, but he said the body also needs to focus on prevention and strengthening institutions and good governance.
When we talk about prevention, I think we have also to talk about our architecture for governance. They are interrelated.
Anita Powell, VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Italy's Foreign Minister Angelino Alfano announced today a new €200 million fund for Africa to reinforce the external borders and stop the departure of illegal migrants. The money has been set aside for cooperation primarily with Libya, Tunisia, and Niger. In addition, a Tunisian man was arrested in Germany today on suspicion of recruiting for ISIS. He may also be involved in the deadly 2015 attack on the Bardo Museum in Tunis. Reporter reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me on the latest migrant developments in Europe.
The Italian Foreign Minister Angelino Alfano has announced a new €200 million fund for Africa to reinforce the external borders and stop the departure of illegal immigrants making that crossing across the Mediterranean to Europe. And this money has been set aside primarily for cooperation with Libya, Tunisia and Niger. This money is also on top of €430 million that's already available for development cooperation. But the new funding is going to really be targeting training for security forces and equipment to strengthen border controls. Now, this is perhaps not a surprise because Italy has been in discussion with these countries to try and reinforce the borders to stop the flow of the immigrants. But this principle, Mr. Alfano said today, is because Italy wants to save lives and it's willing to put its money on the table, put its money where its mouth is. He says that Italy is being loyal to these countries and is now asking for loyalty from its partners in return.
Italy has also seen a 41% increase in asylum requests from last year.
Yes, we're seeing a remarkable increase in requests for asylum. In 2013, the number was around 26,000. Last year, it was 123,000. So that's a huge increase. And as we know, in the past, many immigrants were arriving in Sicily, arriving in Italy, making their way through Italy to other European countries. And this may reflect the fact that more migrants are being forced to stay in Italy with the tighter border controls in Europe and perhaps are deciding to seek asylum here rather than try and take their chances crossing the borders and moving into other European countries.
Also, I understand that a Tunisian man was arrested today in Germany on suspicion of recruiting for ISIS. Can you tell us more about that?
A Tunisian man was arrested in the area of Hesse in Germany on suspicion of recruiting for ISIS, but also he's accused of being involved in a 2015 terrorist attack on the Bardo Museum in Tunis. Now, Tunisian authorities issued an arrest warrant for this man last year on suspicion of being involved in this attack, planning and carrying out this attack, as well as another jihadist assault on the border town of Ben Guadane last March. This is quite a significant move because 21 people, mostly European tourists, were killed in that attack on the Bardo National Museum in March 2015. That was claimed by ISIS, and Tunisian police killed two of the gunmen during that assault. Massive police raids across 50 properties in Hesse on Wednesday morning, and the suspect was arrested.
Also, can you tell us a little bit more about what is going on in one of the islands there in Italy where migrants have flocked to?
Well, as you know, the Italian government is pushing various communities across the country to share the burden of the influx of migrants that we've seen here. And one particular island by the name of Cafri, which is known for hosting the rich and famous, for attracting superstars from Sophia Loren and Jackie Kennedy to Beyonce and Jay-Z. This island is a holiday destination, and the prospect of hosting 45 migrants on this island has attracted fierce debate among the local community. The local population is around 13,000. Of course, that swells in the summer months. The authorities in the nearby city of Naples have asked people here to house the migrants as part of a broader government initiative. Now, business owners and hotels have been resisting this proposal. They don't think it's good for the image of the island, said one man. They don't want to have migrants living and working there. Others say that this could be a good thing. One of the mayors on the island said an integration program could see the migrants given Italian lessons, cooking classes, and a way to help them find work that could be useful on the island. So that gives you just another indication of how divisive the whole issue is about accepting migrants and integrating them into local communities, big and small, in Italy at the moment.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Four British citizens who caught malaria while traveling in Africa have shown apparent resistance to the main drug used to treat the disease, according to researchers at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. As Henry Ridgewell reports, scientists say the discovery should act as a warning for Africa, where the drug has played a key role in sharply reducing mortality rates from malaria.
The four travellers were treated with a drug called Artemether lumefantrine after returning to Britain from different parts of Africa within a five-month period, showing symptoms of malaria. The cases alerted scientists at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, led by Dr. Colin Sutherland.
This drug is normally expected to cure someone after a three-day course, and they're sent home once their blood films show that there's virtually no parasites left. And in each case, these patients seem to have a clear blood film or very close to a clear blood film and were sent home with an apparent clean bill of health, only to return 3 to 7 weeks later.
The drug is part of a treatment known as artemisinin combination therapy, or ACT, widely used across Africa, where most malaria cases and deaths occur. These are among the first cases of apparent reduced susceptibility to the treatment.
If it's under threat from resistance, and we haven't absolutely ascertained that's the case, but we suspect it's certainly time now to look very carefully at that. If it is under threat, that is a serious issue, and we need to take steps.
Such steps might involve using other drugs alongside ACT, but such a change of strategy takes time, says Sutherland.
But of course, a lot of malaria is in the countryside. It's in district hospitals and bush clinics. You can't just say, oh, let's try a different drug if it's not available at the time. So that requires planning and forethought.
Resistance to ACT drugs is an ongoing problem in parts of Southeast Asia, but the resistance shown by the malaria parasites in these four cases is unrelated, Sutherland says.
Whatever it is that is happening in Africa, these four patients don't represent the kind of resistance that has become really a quite serious problem in Southeast Asia.
Chinese scientist Professor Yu Yu Tu won the 2015 Nobel Prize in Medicine for her discovery of artemisinin as a treatment for malaria. Its widespread use has contributed to a 30% fall in malaria deaths worldwide between 2010 and 2015. Scientists say the latest cases of apparent resistance are a warning and should be investigated further. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A little more than 7 weeks after the United States officially entered World War II, a live 15-minute shortwave radio broadcast was transmitted into Germany from a small studio in New York City on February 1, 1942. It was introduced by the American patriotic song, The Battle Hymn of the Republic. Then announcer William Harlan Hale's voice could be heard saying, "We bring you voices from America today and daily from now on. We shall speak to you about America and the war. The news may be good for us, the news may be bad, but we shall tell you the truth." That was the very first broadcast from what 75 years later is now the Washington-headquartered Voice of America. VOA director Amanda Bennett tells us more.
Seventy-five years ago, Voice of America made its first broadcast. Today, we broadcast in over 45 languages all over the world. We broadcast in every means that people could possibly want to receive their news and information. We use radio still. We use television. We broadcast for the web, for mobile, and if new forms of communication are invented, we'll be there too. Our mission is really, really simple. We give neutral, fair, objective, independent news and information to people who have no other access to it. And we tell America's story. And America's story is rich and full. It goes from the entrepreneurial climate of Silicon Valley to our great universities to health and medicine and medical advances. It's also the story of America's diaspora, the people who came here from all over the world. I started my journalistic career more than 50 years ago, and here today at Voice of America, I remember just why I became a journalist. It's such a privilege to be working here with the great men and women who are telling America's story and providing neutral news and information around the world. I'm so happy to be here at Voice of America as it celebrates its 75th anniversary, and I feel proud to welcome it into the next 75 years.
That was VOA Director Amanda Bennett sending to all of our listeners her greetings today, VOA's 75th anniversary.
Human rights observers say the Middle East and North Africa have long been among the world's two worst performing regions when it comes to freedoms. According to the Freedom House World Annual Report, the region last year demonstrated the depths to which human freedom can fall. This after decades of authoritarian misrule, corruption, and erratic foreign interventions. Ellen Agikian is a research analyst at Freedom House. Mohammed El-Shenawi asked her to explain what's behind the low rankings in the report for the Middle East and North Africa.
So the MENA region continues to be one of the two worst performing regions, just ahead of Eurasia. And this is really due to the very low ratings of several countries that have had decades of authoritarian misrule, corruption, and security concerns, erratic foreign interventions that have really affected everything across the spectrum from political rights to civil liberties.
In the North Africa region between Egypt and Morocco, which country scored the most negative ratings and why?
In terms of ratings in North Africa, certainly Egypt is one of the leaders of the least free governments in the entire region.
And why is that?
In Egypt, over the past few years, unfortunately, we have seen a closure of the space for political competition. There is virtually, and this is something that has been true for quite some time, but right now there is virtually no room for formal political opposition, for critical voices, for independent and critical journalism, for activism, and even for such civil liberties as the freedom of assembly and association.
What are the indicators used in Freedom House ratings?
We use two categories of indicators, political rights as well as civil liberties. And within these two categories, our indicators include the electoral process, political pluralism and participation and representation, the functioning of government, corruption and transparency, freedom of expression, religion, freedom of assembly and association, the judiciary, as well as things like freedom from terror, access to due process, and equal treatment of all segments of the population under the law.
What are your expectations from the new U.S. administration toward the MENA region when it comes to improved level of freedoms and transition toward democracy?
Currently it is unclear what the new administration's goals and objectives and priorities are in the MENA region, but I will say that we are not optimistic. During his campaign, President Trump did emphasize that security and stability are big goals. And from what we see overall, it seems like it seems unlikely that the new administration is going to prioritize human rights and democracy promotion in MENA or, honestly, elsewhere in the world.
That was Ellen Agikian, a research analyst at Freedom House. She was speaking with reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Zimbabwe's central bank has embarked on a program to promote the use of credit and bank debit cards in the rural areas to ease the country's cash shortages that have rocked the southern nation for more than a year. As Sebastian Mofu reports from Gokwe, one of the rural areas, it will not be easy for Zimbabweans to fully adopt a cashless society.
Multiple deductions within 72 hours.
Josphat Mutefa, a deputy director at the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe at Chesia High School in Gokwe, about 300 kilometers southwest of Harare, is urging people in this mainly cotton-growing raw area to use credit and bank debit cards instead of cash all the time. As he later told VOA, promoting the use of plastic money in Zimbabwe has not been easy.
I think the topical issue has been the issue of interest on bank accounts. The other issue which has come up is the issue of where do we get point of sale. The other issue which has come up is mainly fear of the unknown. People are not very confident in using new systems.
He said the program was getting a buy-in from community leaders such as traditional chiefs and church pastors who would convince their subjects to use plastic money. Zimbabwe has been facing an acute shortage of cash, forcing some people to sleep in bank lines, hoping for better fortunes the following day. An introduction of Zimbabwe's own currency called bond notes, which traded at par with the US dollar in November last year, has not helped the situation. Diana Mugari from Gokwe is one of those who say Zimbabwe is not yet ready for the credit and debit cards the central bank is promoting. She insists on cash. She says in our shops, those with plastic money face discrimination. Retailers allocate just one teller for those who want to use plastic money, and there will be long queues. She says at times we do not get cashback, or they put unreasonable limits on cashbacks. That presents a difficult position for some, as they would have traveled long distances here in Gokwe to a shop with a point of sale to buy, she adds. She urged President Robert Mugabe's government to ensure that retailers with point of sale machines take care of those who need cash in rural areas for other transactions that cannot be done electronically. In Gokwe, Mutefa said business people taking advantage of the cash problems would be fined, as they were causing Zimbabwe's financial instability. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News in Gokwe, Zimbabwe.
The Nigerian-born novelist Buchi Micheta, who died in London last week at 72, is being remembered as an icon among African writers and a champion of women's rights. A group of authors and book lovers gathered in Micheta's hometown of Lagos to celebrate her works, which include The Joys of Motherhood, still widely read throughout Africa. Writer Inajeta Fumwewa calls Micheta an example of a strong African woman. Micheta published 19 novels and an autobiography during her illustrious career. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhibe in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am your host Shaka Sali. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
Next, on Straight Talk Africa, the 28th African Union Summit, voting for a new leader, discussing the re-entry of Morocco, and mapping the future of the continent. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.